If you are a fan of the Dive Bar Rockstar podcast and would like to help support the show, there's a great way that you can do that and start a new fashion trend. We have a new merchandise page on the website, which features t-shirts and hoodies that are available for sale on Amazon. Just click on merchandise in the top menu and all of the links will be there, or go directly to divebarrockstar.com/merchandise. Get started early on your Christmas shopping at divebarrockstar.com. Welcome to the Dive Bar Rockstar Podcast, a show exploring the lives of professional musicians of all types, touring musicians, recording artists, songwriters, engineers, bar bands, wedding bands, and anyone making their living in the music industry. Whether you've dreamed of being a professional or you already are one, this is the podcast for you. I'm your host, Eric Baines, and I hope that you not only find some entertainment here, but also some helpful tips, trade secrets, and ideas that will help you achieve your dreams. Well, it's a beautiful Easter Sunday, and I'm coming to you from the Ritz-Carlton in Philadelphia, PA, the city of brotherly love. Yes, we're back on the road, and it feels so good to be working, I gotta say. We just came from a couple shows in Canada where it was extremely cold, so I'm really glad that spring is here. The shows were great. The crowds were amazing, sold-out shows. But man, I just don't know how people live in that weather. It's just, it's April and it was 20 degrees, you know, but I've been in California for 22 years. So my blood is thin, I guess, or thick. I don't know. I don't know how that works, but I think by the time this run ends, it should be pretty warm. I guess we ended New York City by the end of April. So it's one of those tours where you just have to pack for two seasons. So I hope I brought the right stuff. My guest today has a very cool Chicago connection. She's the daughter of our esteemed drummer, Walfredo. But she's an extremely accomplished musician already in her young career. She's an incredible singer, and she's also carrying on the family tradition of playing percussion. She's a percussion player, a reluctant percussion player, you'll learn. She's performed with Glenn Frey, Patrice Rushen, Brian Auger, Joey Dosik from Wolfpack. But her big gig, her main gig, is that she tours with the great George Benson on vocals and percussion. And she got that gig right out of college. So she's really had an unbelievable start to her career. But she's remained humble and grateful, and she's got a lot of great things to say. So please enjoy my conversation with Liliana De Los Reyes. I wanted to start by saying thank you because, you know, I discovered when you rode the bus with us that it wasn't just Wally that helped me get the gig. Like, kind of, if you weren't standing in the place that you were standing the moment that Wally called you,
yeah,
then I probably wouldn't have this fabulous gig that I have.
Isn't that so wild?
It's crazy.
I was talking to a friend about this, and I just feel like work or connecting with other people, you're just a one person or one degree of separation away. And right. It's all about your network and connections. But yeah, if I hadn't been standing next to Michael O'Neill to say, hey, I think you need to call my dad.
That's so crazy. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's like a great example of how it happens. You know, it's just a chance thing, and your whole life changes, you know.
Yep.
Which you know, probably has happened to you.
Definitely. Actually, I think the person that introduced me to George Benson is your neighbor. He lives over on Friar Street.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, David Garfield.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize he lived so close, actually.
I don't know That's if he's cool. all the way down here. I think he might be. It's Friar Street. So when I passed Friar Street, I was like, oh, does David live around the corner? But I think he might be up a little bit.
Oh, that's so interesting. Wow. Yeah, so you tour with George Benson.
Uh-huh.
And you've been there for a minute, right?
Yeah, I've been there. I was in college, 2014, when David asked me if I wanted to audition. And I said, yeah.
Wow.
And then I started touring when I was in college, which, looking back on that, is just like a wild time.
Yeah.
Really wild time.
Yeah. And so how did you know David?
So I knew David. Well, so both my parents were in the music industry when they were married and when I was a kid. So grew up around music. And I was probably around him when I was a kid, but in high school, my mom would drive me down. I grew up in the Bay Area. My mom would drive me down to sit in at some of my dad's gigs when he would play. So that was like back when Cafe Cordial was open, Spaghettini's in Seal Beach, Vibrato's, all of that. And I was 16-year-old with braces, and I'd come in and I'd sing. And I'd sing with all of these amazing musicians. And so that was like my slow introduction into the LA music scene, I guess. And then when I came back down for college, even when my dad wasn't in town, some of the guys would still reach out to me and I would still sit in and sing, and then just started gigging with them on the weekends when I was in college. So I was singing at a benefit and David was there and we were all playing together. So he knew, and then I would sing with David when he would kick around to LA. And so he knew what my voice sounded like and that I was studying music at USC. And I think he assumed, like many people do, being the daughter of Wally and the family, that I played music, but, or that I played percussion. But I didn't grow up with my dad and I didn't grow up with that side of the family. So I did not play percussion at all. And I totally lied. And I said that I did.
Right.
And I called my dad. I was like, we got X amount of weeks to make me a professional. And yeah, that's basically what happened.
Wow. That's amazing. And you're not just a professional, like, it's George Benson. Like, it's...
Oh, yeah.
It's a serious gig with serious musicians.
Oh, yeah.
And a history of great percussion players, you know. So that was pretty ballsy, I would say.
You know, I like to lead with that. Like, I like to live my life in that way of like, oh, yeah, I can do that. I can do that. I can figure it out. And I feel like now with all of the things that we have on the internet and all of the tools... most people, like, if you really want to do something, you could figure it out. So that's what I led with. And I called my dad and I was like, do you think I could do this? Because not only did I have to learn how to play percussion, I had to play percussion on an insane level with the best musicians in the world.
Right.
And sing at the same time. And that, you know, was mind blowing to me. And my dad basically was just like, you know what? Yeah. At that time, I was... you know, studying music at USC. So I was learning drum proficiency, beginner, like keys. Basically, the program at Thornton School of Music is they want to turn you out to be just a well-rounded musician overall. So I was, you know, learning a lot of the things to put me out there and be a professional musician. Like, that's the whole point of the program. So I just needed... probably a little bit more time, but you know, when you're in a crunch, you just gotta go for it.
Hope they call the right songs on the audition.
You're like, oh my gosh.
Oh good, I know this one. Really well,
luckily I think David kind of knew. So he worked with me and he's like, okay, learn these five songs. Mm-hmm. But then George's discography is crazy, like crazy, because you have him when he was just pure jazz guitarist, didn't even sing.
Right.
And then he started singing. So you have this crazy, huge jazz history as an instrumentalist. And then when he went more pop R&B, you have all of the vocal tunes and everything that he sings and plays. So he has hundreds of songs that he could pull from.
Wow. That's crazy. And he does pull from those.
Yeah. So when
So it's not a set list it's not a show that's set and...
No, and that was another wild, wild card. So when I first got into the band, they tried to get him to stick to, I think, 50 tunes for my first however many shows there. And then they built it up to 125 and then 150. And there was only a few times where, and yeah, so there's no set list. So he just starts playing a song.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And luckily, you can you know it and you figure it out. And there were only a few times where I looked at the drummer and I thought to myself, I have absolutely no idea what's going on. I don't know what's going on. And you just got to go for it.
Right.
And figure it out.
And hope that's not one you have to sing.
The vocal tunes I knew, but it's more the instrumentals that I was just, I don't know what's going on. What's happening?
Yeah, that's literally my worst nightmare. Like, that's my least favorite way of leading a band or like, you know, that's what I love about Chicago. It's the show is set. I know what I'm going to do from point A to point, you know, to get through the show. It's all going to be, because that's, you know, being on those kind of gigs, it's just for, and it just takes you so long to feel comfortable. I was with Dwight Yoakam before this, and he's the same guy, and he would like, he also was a bar musician before he was huge, so he just knows tunes, you know, for days, and just don't know what they're going to call. And I wasn't really a country guy when I got on the gig either, so I don't have this vocabulary of tunes, you know. So yeah, it was like the first, it took me a year and a half till I felt like, okay, I kind of know what he's going to call sometime. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah,
was
definitely.
That the same kind of?
I mean, yeah, not only was it the song list, but it was also my vocabulary as a musician.
Right.
I was 21 in college. I never toured before.
Right.
I was just playing in town. Right. So completely different to being on massive stages with cameras in your face, festivals, insane musicians that are also on those same bills and lineups watching you.
Right.
I will never forget, we were doing Montreal Jazz Fest. No, Montreux Jazz Fest in Switzerland. Mm. And I was really nervous because George had asked me to start taking percussion solos. And I was like, oh, you gotta be kidding me. Okay. I'm gonna have to work something out. And Quincy Jones.
Oh, God.
Sitting there. And I'm freaking out. I'm freaking, you're talking about like just the highest level of musicianship. And here I am, and I just feel like the greenest fish out of water. Yeah. But Stanley Banks, the bass player that has been with George for many years, he told me, or he asked me, or said, sink or swim. What do you want to do? Sink or swim. And I looked at him, and I was like, oh, I'm swimming. I am swimming. you are not going to watch me sink on this. Right. So I think when I didn't have the vocabulary as an instrumentalist, that was something that I had to build. And I'm still building with playing percussion. So it's a matter of, you know, adding all the tools to your toolbox.
Right.
So when, you know, wild cards do get called, you're able to hang and stay in there.
Wow, what talk about trial by fire. You just
for sure
jumped right in.
Oh, like, for sure.
That's amazing.
Shitting my pants. They're swearing a lot on this.
I think that might be the title of your podcast episode. Shitting my pants.
I'm literally shitting my pants.
Wow. But it's so great that you kept going forward. Like I talk about that a bit on this podcast. Like sometimes it's just like you've just got to, just whatever you can do to take the next step, you know, just keep moving. Just, okay. And if you have a rough night, you know, I don't know about you, but I would beat myself up like crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I really should know this stuff and whatever, you know. But at the end of the day, just get up on stage next, you know, like the next day, get back up there. You know, just keep doing it. Just say yes, like you're talking about.
Definitely. You know? That's always my go-to when younger musicians ask me for advice, or when I talk to students, it's just say yes and figure it out. And also something that my dad told me a long time ago, when I did have moments where I was struggling, he said, nobody cares that you're sick. Nobody cares that you had to drive through 5 hours of traffic to get to the venue, or that you haven't eaten today, or that you didn't sleep last night. Somebody paid for this ticket. Yeah. And they worked really hard to make that money to pay for this ticket to come see you. And maybe they've waited their entire life to see Chicago or George Benson, but they're here and they're in that seat, and you better give them a show. That's your job.
Wow.
And I thought about that and I was like, yeah, yeah, you're not wrong. You are not wrong. So yeah. You kind of just have to leave everything, put it aside and present an amazing show, give an amazing show, yeah. And then you can go
yeah.
Be upset about it. But when you're on stage for that 90 minutes, 75 minutes, whatever it is, give it your all, no matter what that is or what's going on in your personal life.
Yeah. Yeah, and your dad's just the perfect example of that. It's pretty amazing. Like some of his stories too, of like, I was so sick, but I was like, I looked at myself in the mirror and I was like, we got to do this, man. We got to do this.
You know? My dad lives and breathes for the music, for the show, yeah. For, you know, yeah. Just and being an overall entertainer.
Yeah. And one of the things that strikes me about him too, like that I'm always just blown away by all his stories, the confidence in himself, you know, as far as like, which you obviously got enough to where you're like, yeah, I can play percussion. You know, just having that confidence blows me away. Like, because I was always like, yes, I could play, you know, but then freaking out, you know, a lot the same as you're describing. But I remember when I first moved out here, like, I'm putting my CD in everyone's hands and did it. And I get the call to sub for Lee Ritenour. And I was like, in my head, I'm like, can I play with Lee Ritenour? Like, this is going to be, you know, and I just said, of course, yes. But the lesson was, and then like one of the songs, it's called Etude. I spent a good 8 hours on two bars of this song. Just, it was this riff that's really hard. Really, it's like literally 8 hours just on these two bars. That was a unison line with him. But anyways, I just thought that's a big lesson about LA. Like, the phone's going to ring and you're going to have to say yes. And like, be careful what you tell people you can do, because they will say, okay, great, come on out. You know? And then yeah. You better be ready.
Yeah, you better be ready. The call is going to come. And but I think that's the universe.
Yeah.
Listening, watching, however that works. And that's what my dad has always told me too, is there's going to be 10 other people in the same line as you.
Yeah.
And if you get the call, you better be ready. Because if you're not, there's someone behind you.
Yeah.
That'll say yes and they'll be ready. And right. I think that's part of the sacrifice of being a creative or an artist in any capacity, is really putting in the time and energy into your work and into your craft, to developing yourself. And I think I'll just constantly be learning. There's no end game to learning and growing and getting better as a human and on a musical and artistic level.
Right. Yeah, it's like as soon as you stop learning and growing, then you're dying.
Yeah, essentially, yeah.
That's the thing about being a creative, like you said, the other part of that is being a professional. As soon as you want to start making money, then it's not about just being creative, or like, I always just say too, I don't have the luxury of choosing music I like. I got to take the gig that comes up and it's going to pay the rent. And if you want to be creative and all that stuff, and great, do it in your garage and work at your own pace. But as soon as you want to make a living at it, now you've got to compete with all these, it becomes competitive and scary, you know, that rent comes every month.
And being freelance, that's a whole other thing. Yeah, of course you're not going to always play music that you love or that's... I kind of have a three-rule thing about that. It's either got to be with people that you absolutely love and it's a good hang, or it's got to be music that's absolutely amazing, that fills your soul, or it's got to pay really well.
Right.
It's got to be one or two out of the three.
Yeah.
So it could be terrible music, but if it's paying me really well, okay, great. Right. Give me the tunes. I'll learn the tunes. If it's not paying me really well, it better be some amazing music that is filling my heart, filling my cup,
yeah.
Or a great hang with great people, and I get to be with my friends or meet people that I've wanted to play with.
Right.
So yeah. I feel like that's a really good
that's absolutely
kind of like way to look at it.
That's perfect. That's awesome. Yeah. The more of those three you can get, the good, when they all line up together. Yeah,
when they all line up, that's amazing.
You don't ever leave that gig.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's absolutely. Gold. That's cool. So you were growing up and being dragged to gigs, it sounds like. And
pretty much.
And forced in front of people to sing.
Pretty much. Yeah, pretty much. So growing up.
At what
up,
point did it become like a dream, or at what point did you take over and be like, no, I want to sing and I want to go to college and do music? And
probably, well, my dad always tells this story of when I was a kid, I think he told it on the bus when we're all on the bus. And
I'm sure I've heard it 10 times.
But. Probably heard it like 10 times. One thing about my dad is that he has great stories, but you have to hear them a dozen times.
Yeah.
So apparently I was a kid. I don't remember this, but we were in a hotel and my dad had just ordered room service and we're hanging and we're, you know, watching movies. And I looked at my dad and I said, you know, when I grow up, I'm going to do what you do, Dad. Like, I'm going to sleep in hotels and order room service. And it's so funny because I've been doing that exact same thing. And I don't like eating room service. That's not what I love. But I think I've always kind of known that I wanted to be in the entertainment industry to some degree. When I was a kid, I was also an avid dancer. So I was in dance classes and just loved movement, loved visual performance. And growing up with two parents in the music industry, there was also this influx of people from all around the world coming in and out of the house and always music going. And that's how we spent time as a family, was in the studio playing music or going to shows. Mm. So there was always music around and music ingrained. And I realized that was also kind of a ticket for me. Mm. So my parents split when I was about 8 or 9, and my dad was not involved in my life for the majority of it. Right. So my mom raised me and my brothers, and in high school I realized, okay, if I'm going to go to college, I need to utilize what it is that I have and figure out how to do that. And I saw my voice as a ticket that could take me somewhere. So in college, I didn't really know what I was going to major in. I ended up at community college for a couple of years, and then I auditioned for UCLA and USC and ultimately went with USC, and I had a great experience there.
Yeah, was it great?
The faculty is amazing. Patrice Rushen was one of my mentors there.
She's amazing.
And Dugu Chancellor was teaching at the time. Carl Verheyen is there. Wow. There's so many amazing musicians.
That's awesome.
That are there. Did not do well in music theory. I swear if I was going to drop out of college, it was going to be because of music theory. I did not do well in music theory at all.
Interesting.
Because I had no formal training before college.
Oh, gotcha.
So I had never had lessons before. I didn't have a music program at my school. And when I auditioned, I didn't know how to read or write music, and to go in at a collegiate level to be an aural and theory skills with jazz pianists and, you know, instrumentalists. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea what was going on. Oh my God, it was awful. Wow. It was awful. I would call my mom crying, like, I'm coming home. And she was just like, there's nothing here for you. You can't come home.
Wow.
So I had to stick it out. And then when I started touring, I had to go to my teachers and say, hey, I have this really amazing opportunity. And they were looking at me like, you're barely passing my classes, you? And I was like, I swear, out of a classroom setting, I'm not terrible. Like, I don't suck.
Right.
Written tests are not my thing, you know? It's not my thing.
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing. So another situation where you're just like, I'll figure it out.
Yeah, gotta figure it out. It meant a lot to get that degree. I was the first in my family to go to college. And my mom was so supportive and encouraging. And I think that, you know, she didn't have that opportunity. Well, both my parents are immigrants and came here when they were kids. And both my parents finished high school here, I believe. I think my dad finished high school here. But I was the first in my family to go to college. So my mom was just so supportive and encouraging in any way that she could be, but that it only could go so far. So I had to kind of figure it out for myself.
Right. Wow. Well, congratulations. That's great. Yeah. That's awesome. And that's and it also brought you to LA, which is another good thing to use college for, I think.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Definitely. I definitely wanted a college experience. Both my parents wanted me to go to CalArts, which is a smaller school, performing arts school. Deeper in, that's not the valley, I guess it's like Canyon Country, but that's in LA, but it's outside of LA. And my mom and I pulled up on campus to view the college, and I looked at her and I said immediately, no, I want a football team. I want frat parties. If I'm gonna go to college, like, let's go to college. And I did have a really good experience.
Well, that's great. And how is, like, the neighborhood down there and stuff? It's always in, like, a sketchy, it's sort of semi-sketch down there.
Yeah, you know? It's interesting, but I think they they're called the Yellow Jackets. So they have these, I guess, security people within like certain parameters. And I only lived two blocks from school and would ride my bike or walk. So I always felt okay. And I had a car, which was great.
That's cool. Yeah. Very nice. We got to have one of those in LA.
I know. But a lot of the kids coming in, especially freshman and sophomore year, don't have cars because their parents don't want that. But I think in order for me to continue gigging in LA, I had to have a car. And I was a bit older since I had transferred in. And that was the whole point of going to school in LA was, okay, I know that I'm going to land here after and work within the industry here. So why don't I start that? It was a huge thing to prove to my mom, who was supporting me through college, that she was making all of these sacrifices for good reason. And that was because, like, I was going to do something with this degree. I'm going to excel.
Yeah.
Even if I'm failing, I'm going to make it.
Right.
I'm going to make it.
Yeah.
So that was really important.
Yeah. That's so great. I feel like you have to have that. It can't just be about music. You know, you have to have this sort of career. You know, you have to see it as a career. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's what it sounds like. You had a pretty good handle on that, you know.
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, yeah, I'm going to join a band and we're going to get big.
Well, there was a lot of like reality checks from both my parents, and also watching my dad go through just touring and session work in LA. You could have a gig one day and it could be gone the next. So the dependency on live music, which I had to learn for myself through COVID, because up until COVID, most of my income was dependent on live music and touring.
Right.
And I had a huge reality check, and I questioned myself a lot of what I wanted to do. And also, I think being a woman, I just don't foresee myself climbing into a bunk on a tour bus of 40-something years old. It's like, this is not for me. I don't want that life. I just, like, for me personally, I don't think so. Because also, mostly touring, actually all of my touring experience, I'm the only female.
Right.
So that's been really interesting. And working in LA, unless there are other background vocalists, it is very rare that I'm working with other women. So I'm mostly working with men. And I just realized, okay, I don't want to be on a freaking tour bus with a bunch of dudes forever.
Right.
So I started to look at different outlets that were also creative. And I got into content creation and photography and styling. I've always been really into clothes. So I'm like, awesome. Okay, what else can I do? And also, if I didn't want to live in LA, where could I take this with me?
Right.
And that was important to me too.
Yeah, definitely. And you get to travel a lot. Like he does Europe a lot stuff too. So you probably have access to cool new fashion that hasn't hit us over here yet, you know.
Amazing locations, amazing hotels. Yeah, I've really been all over the world, which has been an incredible experience. But I think that showed me this other side. And I'm like, oh yeah, I want to go check that out. I definitely can't be in LA forever.
Yeah, that's cool. So not only are you on a bus with dudes, like, and you're 21, like, older dudes, like, like, that's one of the things that struck me. So you rode the bus from LA to Vegas with us after we did a show out here, and that's the first time we met. But it struck me as you were talking, like, oh, this is a girl who knows how to be on a bus with a bunch of old dudes, you know?
Like, yeah, for like, sure.
Yeah, but do you think that's been a good experience in terms of learning? Probably though, right? Or has it just been awkward? Or how is that?
I think working in general, even if I'm not like on a bus with a bunch of dudes, I think being around older men in general has been interesting to me because we're both on a learning curve. Like there's a lot of things that has happened, like, like in our society and politically that might have been okay to say or joke about at one point.
Right.
And that's been really interesting when jokes are made around me and I'm looking at them like, bro, you got a daughter.
Wow.
We're not saying that anymore.
Right.
It's not funny. So I've definitely had to be that person. Yeah, that's been interesting. But I also think I'm very laid back and really chill. I think the tour manager and production manager when I first got in were a little worried because they thought, oh, this 21-year-old college girl with no touring experience, is she going to sleep through lobby calls and sound checks and like what's going on? Are we going to have to babysit? And
No.
I'm very professional. I'm very, very laid back and chill. I can hang on a bus. I keep to myself for the most part.
Yeah.
and I get along with everybody. And if I don't like you, then I just will not be around you. Like I'll just, right. You know, take a step back.
Disappear.
And not, yeah, disappear. Like yeah. we don't need to be in the same airspace.
Right.
So I feel
like, I love my bunk. Like give me a bunk and I'm in my phone and I'm good forever. You know, I can easily just go away. You know?
Yeah, same. Yeah. And I think I also don't drink a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Not really into like a lot of partying. I have my moments, don't we all? So that was really chill because everyone just makes their drinks their wine, grabs their slice of pizza post show. We're either shooting the shit or we're putting on a TV series or we keep to ourselves and you go to your bunk.
Right.
That's been fine. I will say, putting down the toilet seat. Oh my God. I can't tell you how many times I would go into the bathroom and almost fall in the toilet in the middle of the night because guys would not put down the toilet seat. So there's the little things. Right. There's like the little things. But for the most part, I grew up with two brothers.
Right.
We shared a room. Yeah. I'm fine.
Yeah.
That's fine.
That probably helps a lot.
Yeah. I think, growing up with two brothers and just being like pretty neutral.
Yeah. But that's interesting too that you don't mind getting in their faces and you know, making them aware of things. I think that's a good thing.
I mean, not like getting in anyone's face, but I've definitely had my moments where I've had to say, like, you can't say that.
Yeah.
You cannot say that. That is not okay. That is not funny.
Right. It's an interesting choice that you have to make, I think, because on the other hand, like, you know, these are the people that you have to make your living with, too.
Right.
And, like, it'd be probably, well, maybe not easier for everybody, but some people would think it'd be easier to laugh and walk away or whatever, you know, but you also spend a lot of time with these guys, you know?
Well, I think for the most part, and especially the first few years that I was on Benson's gig in particular, I did laugh and walk away. And then I got really tired of doing that.
Yeah.
And I had a situation, a really uncomfortable situation. And I think not on that gig, on something else. I was doing a recording for another major artist and I had an uncomfortable encounter with that producer. And I think that jaded me a lot where I walked away from that. And I was just, I had reached the threshold of putting up with bullshit.
Right.
And I was still so young. I was 26 at that time.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
26 or 27. And I just couldn't do it anymore. I stopped wearing outfits that I would normally wear. I was starting to like not wear makeup, show up with really oversized clothing. My personality, I could feel, was shifting. Just like my overall demeanor, I was very closed off. And so I think that shifted a lot of the things that I would tolerate.
Right.
And at that point, I was like, no, I'm not laughing at these jokes anymore because they're not funny.
Right.
And I don't have to.
Right.
So I think that shifted things. And I think as a society, we all went through a shift and we all felt things that were being brought to our attention that maybe were kind of swept under the rug.
Yeah.
Previous to that. I think,
big time.
Yeah.
I think we still are.
Oh, we definitely still are. But I think we can also have more open conversations about it. And
right.
It's really interesting generationally touring with people that are older and then touring with people that are my age because it is two totally, totally different things.
Yeah.
In particular, to men, like talking to men of my dad's age and talking to men of my age. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, wow, okay, this is good. This is amazing. Like I do feel that shift in our society, at least in my experience.
Yeah. No, so. that's great. That's good to hear.
Yeah. No, it feels really good. And it felt really good.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Well, there you are. You're making change.
I hope so. I hope we all are.
Yeah. I mean, they say you can't teach an old dog new tricks, though. So, you know, it's a hard job.
Some of these motherfuckers are really just stuck in their old ways, and it's fine. That's when I'm just like, okay, whatever. I roll, walk away. But sometimes I gotta say something.
So how is it out there for musicians your age? You know, like, it seems so gloomy on the one hand, but as far as like, are there still gigs to get? Like, I came out here wanting to do what I'm doing. Like, I wanted to be a touring guy. You know, I kind of made a choice early on, like it's going to take me as much energy to network my way into studios and sessions as it is to be on the road. And I really love hotels and I love traveling, and that's what I wanted to do, you know? So, but there were tons of gigs, you know, and it just feels like, especially with the current pop music and whatnot, you know, they can go out with dancers and tracks half the time and a lot less musicians. And like, does it feel like there's still ample opportunities, or is it a struggle, you know?
I think it's both. I definitely think it's both. I think to be a musician today, you have to have multiple income streams.
Right.
I think the day of, or the days of just relying on touring or just relying on session work and being an LA in town guy, there's just, you need different outlets of income. So I think that, first of all, is really important. And I think there's both. It's interesting to see everything pop off post-pandemic.
Right.
I feel like everyone's on tour right now. And so there are so many opportunities there. But with major pop acts, it can just shift so quickly.
Yeah.
And everything could be so up and down. So I feel like, you know, with a legacy act touring with Chicago and me touring with George, those are so cushy. Like, you just get used to your routine. You get used to nice hotels, your catering, your small little camp. And with these pop acts, sometimes you have no idea what your itinerary is until like 2 days before. And you have no idea if they're going to cancel the show or, you know, the show's going on.
Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting.
A lot of times they'll be out for the summer and then it's over for 2 years.
Right. You know? Right. Exactly.
Whereas George seems like he likes to work.
He does.
And Chicago definitely likes to work, you know. So it's, those are, if you want to do those gigs, those are the gigs to have, you know.
they're amazing. It's interesting that I started off there.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So spoiled.
So spoiled. And anything, you know, after that was like, okay, well, you know, that's fine. Everything's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially with the older people, because like Chicago, they know what they don't like in a tour. You know what I mean? Like, they've been doing this for 56 years. And now, like you say, the hotels are right. The after show food's great. You know, like all the details are worked out. I've never been on a more flawless tour.
Yeah. It's a well-oiled machine.
Yeah.
I always say that about George and his camp. Because they joke around. I'm the only one that's like, oh yeah, I'll fly in here a few days earlier. Fly me out of here because I'm going to go to Morocco. Just wild, crazy things. If I'm, you know, all the way over here, I might as well. And sometimes they'll joke around when I want to take day trips, because they're like, don't leave the mothership. The mothership is rolling. If you stray from the mothership, you're like off on your own. Oh, and the mothership is like taken care of. And we're like well-oiled and good to go.
Yeah. That's the other thing I like about touring, is like, I'm basically an infant when I'm out there. All I have to do is make the lobby call. Yep. The rest is on them.
Yep. You know? It's amazing.
Okay, get me where I'm going. You know, point me to the stage. Hand me my bass. You know, here we go.
Yeah, you know? It's amazing.
It's a great feeling.
It's great. And then when you come home, you're kind of like, oh, I got to drive. I got to fend. I got to fend for myself out here. I got to make my own meal.
I
got to
drive in LA. What decisions have I made for myself?
I remember one time one of my girlfriends came to pick me up at the airport in my car, because I was going to drop her off at the airport the same day, and then we're going to grab lunch, and then I was going to go back home. And I hadn't driven in 2 months. I had been gone for 2 months.
Yeah.
And I go to get in the car, and I put the car in drive instead of reverse to get out of the spot. And I immediately stopped. And she just looked at me like, are you okay? I was like, girl, I have not driven in 2 months. I don't know what I'm doing. It was such a foreign, weird feeling.
Yeah.
It was so weird. But I will say, I love coming home and frying my own eggs. It's one thing. Love that. Love that feeling. Yeah, that's my thing. Making my own coffee and frying my own eggs.
Nice. That's pretty cool. Yeah. And if you spend time in like London or wherever, and like, or Japan, where they drive on the wrong side of the road, and you kind of get used to that for a second too. Yep. And then that'll mess me up, just because now I have to think about it, you know?
That's me with crossing.
Oh,
we're in the UK for a while.
Right.
And then we're in a different country. I'm still veering to the opposite side when I'm passing people on the sidewalk, and then they're looking at me like I'm crazy. I was like, sorry, it's not my fault. It's not my fault. I just turned around, you know?
You just do your best fake British accent.
Sorry, like, sorry. So sorry.
I'm not from here.
Not from here. Pardon me.
Oh, that's funny. I know I've said it many times on this podcast, but it's really important to me to pass on all the information that's been given to me over the years about how to work as a musician. Of course, we get into a lot of topics on the show, but if you'd like to learn more, there is a way to get some one-on-one time. Go to golive.ly, search for me, Eric Baines, and take a private bass lesson. I can teach you advanced bass techniques, music theory, improvisation, or we can talk about how to prepare for a gig, the best thing to wear on an audition, or the most important thing to know about living on a tour bus. I'm also offering private songwriting sessions. If you have a new song that isn't quite working, and you need some feedback from someone who's written, co-written, and plays songs on records, TV, film, and video games, I can help you with that too. All skill levels are welcome. Search for Eric Baines at golive.ly, pick a date and time, and sign up for a lesson. It's that easy. That's golive.ly, golive.ly. And I can't wait to meet you. I'd like to take a second and thank you for listening to the Dive Bar Rockstar podcast. Getting the word out is a vital part of what it takes to keep this show on the road, and the easiest way to help is to subscribe wherever you listen, and if you have an extra minute or two, please leave a review. You can also follow our page on Facebook, which is the Dive Bar Rockstar Podcast, or follow me on Instagram at Dive Bar Rockstar. Okay, enough begging. I hope you're having a great time, and once again, thank you for listening. But it was kind of nice that you at least knew what you were getting into, having grown up with a touring father, though. You know, yeah. There must not have been that many surprises. Because you kind of been. So. Did you like visit a lot of tour buses as a kid?
Well, yeah, I remember. Yeah. I remember as a kid, you know, doing day drives with the band, and yeah. I think at that time, those memories. My dad was with Steve Winwood, and I do have memories of some day drives. But it was nice that once I started working for myself, I had both my parents to bounce back information and ideas off of. And if they didn't have an answer, they could direct me to someone that did have an answer. And that was really, really helpful when it came to negotiating money. Mm. So I think that's always kind of an iffy subject that people are afraid to talk about or share information.
Yeah.
I've noticed is people don't want to tell you how much they're getting paid.
Right.
Yeah. Like it's really weird and really iffy. And luckily I could talk to my friends about that now and I feel comfortable enough to talk about that now. But then I also just didn't have that much experience and I knew I was getting kind of a fumbled low end of the rate, which at that time I was like, fine, that's fine. I'll take it.
Well, when you're coming out of college, totally, probably a lot of money.
Yeah. I was like, to even be making money. What's crazy is before I started working with George, I was a full-time student and I had a desk job on campus as part of my financial aid package. Uh-huh. And I asked my mom if it would be okay if I could take the money that I made that semester and go backpacking in Europe for a few weeks. I'd never traveled in Europe. And I'm like, uh-huh. Oh, I'm in college. Like, this is the summer. I'm going to go meet people and stay in hostels and do that whole thing. And she said, yes, absolutely. Of course. I was so excited. And I think uh-huh. I asked her like in September or October. And in November is when I got the call to audition for George. And it was supposed to be for their European summer tour that year coming up. And that was part of my hustle was like, that's my ticket. There we go again.
Yeah.
That's my ticket. Not only am I going to get paid to travel through Europe, I'm going to stay at the best places and see the most amazing things.
And not only that, like when you're working, you get to see a whole different side of life that you would never see as a tourist, mm-hmm. you know, and now you know what European engineers are like and like European road crews. And like, you know, I love that part. It's like people, you know, tend to look down on that a little bit. Like, well, you're always just working or whatever, but it's like, no, I feel like I see more of a country working in that country than I do just, okay, tell me the great restaurant to go to when I'm there. Like, you know,
it's different. It's definitely a different way to travel.
Like you learn more about the culture because you have to deal with local people and whatnot.
Yeah.
At least I've found.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I like interacting. I remember having some amazing conversations with crew. Like some of these guys were, one summer we spent a lot of time with these Northern Irish guys. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They were like from Northern UK and I loved their accents. And I would just get them to teach me things. And then we've had some like great crew from Italy, just all over.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely agree.
Wow, that's cool. And are you bilingual?
I am not.
Oh, interesting.
I got to work on that. So I'm going to Mexico City in May and mm-hmm. I'm going to spend a few weeks there. And I am either going to get a tutor while I'm there or I need to pull out my Spanish workbooks before I get there. But that is definitely a goal of mine, is to learn Spanish.
Yeah. You need to talk to your dad a lot.
I need to. I know I should. I should just say you're not allowed to talk to me unless you're talking to me in Spanish. Uh-huh.
So you mentioned your mom a couple times. So what did she do in the music industry?
She was on the music business side. So she was in accounting and business. And she was the business manager for Journey for many, many years. And then she was close with Bill Graham and just like very in the Bay Area, San Francisco music scene.
Got you.
And then she had a smaller list of clientele when she moved down to LA, Manhattan Beach. And actually that's how my parents met, was she was representing Neil Sean, the guitarist and original member of Journey.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he had heard or had seen this up and coming amazing drummer from Cuba, but he didn't know how to say his last name, or he didn't know how to say his name. And Carolina, can you please come and introduce me to this guy? And she's like, you've got to be fucking kidding me. Like, you can't introduce yourself. And it was at a NAMM party or like a NAMM after party. And she didn't want to be there. And she was like, she was supposed to be going out with girlfriends. And she's like, okay. So she goes down and she meets this guy and she thought to herself, okay, I'm going to marry him. And that's how my parents met. She was on the music business side.
Got you. So you got the music side and the music business. That's pretty spoiled again, you know?
I know. I got really, I entered this world, I feel like the history of what was going on was, you know, already popping off before I even got here. So I kind of came in. And
so when you got the George gig, were you familiar with his music and stuff too?
I had no idea who he was.
Okay.
I was in my Pro Tools class, read the email, and I turned over to one of my best friends and I was like, do you know who George Benson is? And he was like, yeah. Are you kidding me? Like, he's one of the best guitarists in the world. He's like, huge guitarist. And I was like, okay, cool. Gotta Google him. I had no idea. I did not know his discography. Like, I didn't know anything. And the interesting thing is, when I was in school, I chose to study contemporary popular music. Mm-hmm. So I'm not a jazz singer. Part of the gig is to sing duets with him to sing. And I was just not really well versed in anything. I really just threw myself into the jazz world knowing nothing.
Wow.
So if you're going to do it, you might as well just do it.
I mean, what the heck? That's what you're supposed to do when you're 21. You know, I don't think, you know, I think you get older and you start thinking about it and your confidence dies when you, it's like the old phrase, the more you know, the less you know. Like, the more you learn, the less you know. The more you learn, you realize how much you don't know.
Interesting.
And like, when you're 21, you think you know a lot and you're just like, oh, I'll just do it. It'll be great.
I didn't think I knew shit. Like, that's why I was like in college. I'm like, teach me all the things because I don't know anything.
Got you.
Yeah. And I don't know anything.
Well, speaking of that, do you think that USC prepared you for what you're doing now?
I think it did. The really interesting part is where I struggled the most, which was theory and reading, I don't really have to utilize as a vocalist. I think if I were to do more session work where you had to come in and be able to sight read, I would really have to brush up on that. But the foundation is there.
Mm-hmm.
And I have all of the tools. I would just have to, you know, go back and reread and kind of learn that skill.
Right.
But it really does. It really does turn you out to be able to write your own charts, write for horn sections, string sections, be able to play chords on a piano, be able to sit down in a drum set and, you know, play something and be able to direct your own band. So you focus in on your instrument, and mine was voice. but they really well round you so that you're able to go out in the world and do that.
That's great. That's really cool. Yeah, I talk about college a lot because I think it's important still, you know, and there's such this thing about like, well, what, you're going to be in debt for $100,000. I'm like, well, go to community college because like do something because education's important, you know, and I think there are kind of two paths and maybe you agree with this or not, but if you want to be in the next big band that's amazing and you're a songwriter and you've got a unique voice maybe or whatever, maybe music school can be somewhat detrimental to your creative thing. But if you want to make a living playing music, I think it's pretty important.
And once
you get on these good gigs and you start to say, oh, that guy went to Berkeley or that guy went to the University of Miami or North Texas or USC, and you're like, oh, people are college educated. It's kind of important. You're going to be competing with really good players.
It definitely is important, but I don't think it's necessary. Hmm. Like if I had to go back and do it over again, would I? Probably, because I personally wanted that experience for myself. A lot of my community and my friends come from there, and I needed a landing spot at 20. When you're 18 to 24 years old, it's kind of, you're in this in between. You're still an infant, like you were still a child. Right, I don't care what they say about being 18 being legal.
Right.
No, you still have so much growing to do, and I think college is that great landing spot. Mm-hmm. But I don't think, like, if you don't have accessibility to a higher education, I still think you can be an amazing artist and creative and musician. Without that, you can take private lessons. There's so many classes that you can take online without having to commute into a college or live on campus. Yeah. So I think there are so many different facets, but if you want some sort of backup plan, sure, great. If I decided I wanted to move to the middle of nowhere and get a teaching job, yeah, I could do that because I do have a degree. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because at one point my dad wanted to, I can't remember, he was looking at some sort of job and he needed a degree. And he was like, oh, I never finished. But the crazy part is he has this insane list of people that he's worked with and this insane history that someone that has their master's in music might not have.
Right.
So it's kind of like a weird thing.
I know. I deal with it too. I never finished either. And I love teaching, but I, you know, I did 2.5 years of college, like 30 years ago, you know, so like, that's not gonna, I couldn't even go back and like start at a decent place, you know, and I'd have to start all over.
You could go back and like see, I don't know. I feel like,
but at the same time, it's like, I've had 30 year career. Like, it's like you're saying, it's like, well, I think I still have a lot to offer. And I have 30 years of real experience versus, you know, a bunch of book reading, but I don't know.
And that's two totally, now that you say that, that is two totally different things.
Yeah.
To be able to read music and play what's written versus actual real life experience. I think that's what I was trying to explain to my teachers when I was saying, when they were surprised that I was the one working.
Right.
It's like, some of the best, George doesn't know how to read music. Right. Some of the best musicians in the world don't know how to read music. And part of that, it could be both. I feel like you have to be well-versed and well-rounded, but a lot of music is a feeling and going into a room with people and creating things that aren't put in front of you or written. And then there are other job opportunities that they want you to play exactly what it is that they have written out.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can find work in different areas.
Well, that's the other thing I always say is like, the more skills you have, the more gigs you can take.
Yep.
So you can learn to read or not, but it's just a lot of jobs you're not going to have, you know?
Yeah. I think having a degree doesn't hurt you, but I also think you can still have an amazing career without it. And it's not a necessity. Nobody has ever hired me based on having a degree, and nobody has ever asked me if
I have a degree. That's a good point. Yeah. And I didn't have YouTube when I was a kid. So,
true.
I mean, YouTube is incredible.
So true.
Like, you have access to so much knowledge, like you were saying. So it is a different world that we're living in.
It's so different. I was cleaning out my mom's garage and I found a box of my dad's stuff, and it was old VHS tapes that he had of people's solos and concerts that he would study.
Yeah.
And that was so wild to me.
Yeah. And to like get those. Like he probably gathers those from the back rooms.
Yeah, and then you trade them with your friends.
Yeah.
And like, your friends are like trading different, like, oh, I recorded this the other day.
Yeah.
So I asked him, I was like, do you want these for like nostalgia's sake? And he's like, I don't even have a VHS player anymore. I don't even have a CD player. The only CD player that I have is in my car. And I think I've used it twice.
I know.
I don't even have a CD player.
I don't either.
Different world.
People hand me their CD. I'm like, I don't. Is it on YouTube?
Exactly.
Do you have a flash drive?
Yeah.
Maybe I can make that happen. SD card. I don't know. I can't do CDs.
Totally different. I mean, I think in this like this era, people don't want physical things.
We're more
of a minimal.
I think so. Well, now we're just used to
just
it now.
Digital.
Now every song in the world is on Spotify. So
yeah,
it's on your phone. You
know, it's such and so much weird. Easier. You carry around.
Yeah.
All this information in your pocket.
Yeah. I know. Me and my friend Rudy were always talking about, you know, if we're, what was that? Blah, blah, blah. It's like, if only there was a device that you could hold in your hand that knew the answer to every question in the world, you know, like, and here we are. We have it. Man, I do have a list of questions. I forgot. I'm trying to do this new thing.
Okay.
So anyway, so here's my questions that I think are interesting and maybe you won't.
Hit
Who
me.
Cares? Okay. Ready? Well, first off, before I get there, how many times do you think you've seen Chicago play?
I don't know. At least 8. Like, definitely at least 8 times.
Okay. Not too bad.
I feel like maybe I'm forgetting some. Yeah. I don't know. It's been a lot. Like, if I never saw the show again, no offense. I'm good. I'm solid.
Awesome. Okay, what time do you get up in the morning?
Usually around 7:30, 7:45.
In the morning.
Yeah. It also depends. Me, my brother, co-share our dog, Stella.
Oh, gotcha.
And when I don't have Stella, sometimes I like to sleep in. I can't sleep in past like 9:30. Yeah. When I do have her, she nose boops me like, girl, get up. Let's walk. Like, let's go. So I have to be up at least by 8 when I have the dog. Like, I cannot sleep in past 8 a.m. When I have this dog.
Got you. Excellent. See, I think that's kind of interesting because a lot of people are, oh, musicians, they sleep till noon. They're out all night. I'm like, you'd be surprised how many people do not do that.
You know? It really depends. I have this, I don't know if it's a good trait or a bad one, but if I don't feel productive in the morning or the first half of the day, I hit that slump. And especially in the wintertime when the sun goes down earlier, I just can't get my shit together. And then I have this whole like bad talk in my head of like, you didn't do anything today.
Right.
You got to be productive. So I feel like waking up early kind of battles that because I don't want to talk to myself really in my mind, you know? I want to make it a pretty place in there.
Nice. That's awesome. And did you graduate college? We already talked about that.
Yes,
you did. Even against all odds, you did.
Against all odds.
That's cool. So if a gig starts at 9, like an in-town gig, what time do you get there?
Depends. I always like to be there an hour before.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if I'm playing before that, because I have to load in drums instead of drums. But I always like to be there an hour before. I feel like anything past that is a little too risky. Or if you at least go like, or you're in the area and like walk into the venue and assess the situation, you can go grab a bite or a coffee down the street. But an hour before is like good. Perfect. What about you? I'm curious.
I'm more of an hour and a half guy. Like I hate being late. I can't do it. I'm always just stupid early. Just like, and maybe even sometimes too, just because I would rather go make sure it's great, set up my stuff, and then I go get, you know, go get coffee or whatever. And I can always kill time, especially with a phone.
That's true.
I can always kill time. That's fine with me. I'm the airport guy too. I'm gonna be there like 2.5 hours early.
Nope, not me. Not I. Oh my gosh. I would probably give my dad and my younger brother. He's the 2-hour guy.
Yeah.
And I would give everybody a heart attack. I think just because I've had to be there so much.
Yeah.
I'm like, I know how this works.
Right.
I know. Yeah. I get there right as everyone's boarding.
Oh, wow.
To my gate. Like, I get to the gate when everyone's boarding.
I'm getting PTSD just thinking about that. I can't do that.
That's me. I'm that person.
I'm the one that's like at the front of the line, like as soon as it even gets close, and like I'm standing up, like I want to get on as fast as I can, mostly because I probably just want to get to sleep. And the other reason is like overhead baggage freaks me out. And if I have a carry on or something, I'm always stressed. Like, I want to be as on there as fast as I could possibly be.
Oh my gosh, that's so interesting. Yeah, that is not me. I want to be the last one sitting on the plane. I'll even just like chill at the gate while everybody boards, and I'd rather be the last one on the plane. I don't know.
A lot of people like that. It's not unusual. That's funny. And how often do you listen to music for pleasure?
Every day.
Oh, really?
Every day.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's cool. So that's like part of you force yourself to do that, or you just love it, or?
No, I just sometimes, I think sitting in silence gets a little uncomfortable for me. And that's just like, I don't know, the thoughts creep in. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I just need to fill the space. Or also, if I'm working and I have a lot of music in my head, I need to listen to something else that has no lyrics or something completely different to kind of filter that out of my head. Because as you know, you could learn a bunch of music for a session or a gig and you play it for whatever the time is, and then you have to let it go.
Yeah.
But you just spent all that time learning that music, and now you did the thing and you have to completely release all of it from your brain.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh.
So sometimes
wake up in the middle of the night and it's...
And the tunes
especially
are spinning.
If I'm mixing or something and I've just spent 8 hours on a mix, and then I'll wake up in the middle of the night and it's just going, and
That's good. I have one of my really good friends does Music Monday playlists, and she has a classical pianist background, and so I really like her taste in music because it introduces me to musicians and artists that I wouldn't have probably sought out for myself. And it's a lot of instrumentals and just soothing, calming.
Yeah.
You know, and she throws some pop in there. It's good.
That's awesome. Do you still get nervous before going on stage?
Not for big shows. I guess I get nervous for LA because I know like my people are in the audience.
Yeah.
And smaller venues because it's so much more intimate. If there's thousands of people in the audience.
You're looking in people's eyes at the small ones.
Like you and I are doing right now.
Yeah.
It feels very, you know. But I feel like for bigger venues and bigger stages, I don't know. I like it. I like the energy. I like watching people experience what we're giving. And it's so interesting also to be on the other side of that as an audience member. Mm-hmm. I love looking around at everybody enjoying music. I feel like that's such a really cool part of our job.
Yeah.
But no, I don't think I get nervous on that. Yeah. It was more so during the like shitting my pants era.
Yeah, right.
Less of that now that I have more experience. But in that era, I was nervous a lot, a lot.
Yeah.
Not as much anymore.
That's good. That's progress. And what song do you never get sick of playing?
I was just talking about this with a girlfriend. George does a rendition of Wichita Lineman.
Oh, one of my favorite songs of all time.
Yeah, and...
I have to look that up.
It's
does he have a recording of that, or is he doing it live?
I don't think so. I don't think so. And it's so crazy because there are songs that I definitely... get sick of playing.
Yeah.
But for some reason, when I get full body chills, goosebumps, there's something about playing that song and coming together as a band that really does it for me. And I've had multiple moments within that song where we're playing that and I'm looking around and I'm like, wow, I'm so lucky. Wow, this is amazing. Wow, this is great. So I think I just have core memories of that feeling. So whenever we play that song, gives me those, I don't know, the neck hairs kind of stand up and I'm like, oh yeah, I love this song.
Oh, I got to look that up. I love that song so much. And the last question, do you feel like you've made it?
No.
No.
I don't know. I read something or an interview by Beyonce and she said something to the extent of you work so hard and you win the Grammy, but then what's next? Like you're still reaching. You're always going to continuously reach for something because you're constantly growing. You're constantly pushing yourself. You're constantly evolving. So what is making it? I mean, I personally think Beyonce has made it, but it was so crazy to hear that she doesn't think that she's made it because she has this whole list of goals.
Yeah.
That now she just won this Grammy, but like I have all of this other stuff that I need and want to do.
Yeah.
So I don't think, no, absolutely not. Oh my gosh, no.
I think that's part, maybe it's part of who we are as musicians. And you kind of talked about it earlier about like, we're just constantly working on our craft. Mm-hmm. It's a lifelong endeavor. It never ends. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So because of that, you know, I don't think you're ever, I don't want to say satisfied, but you're never done. How about that?
Yeah. I think there's something about being a creative.
Yeah.
That the wheels are always spinning.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're constantly reaching for something, even if it's just for you mm-hmm. on a human level
right.
or for your career.
Yeah.
It right. could be both, really.
Yeah. All right. You're done now. Okay, thanks. Well, thank you so much for coming. This has been incredible. It's been great talking to you. And I guess I'll probably see you at another Chicago show. You're going to have to see the show again at some point.
You know, that's such a funny thing because when I went to Vegas with you guys or when I caught the show in LA mm-hmm. and went to Vegas, I was talking with a friend who was like, oh, I'll meet you out in Vegas. Like, let's go to a show. I was like, no, I'm not going to the show. I'm going to go spend the days off with my dad. They're like, why wouldn't you go to a show? I was like, because I've seen all the shows, seen all of them. Like, I don't need to go to another show, but I love that some of my friends are like, let's go.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. But do you find that with George Benson too? Like, I find in relationships, like my wife, when we first got together, she'd come out and see me every time we play, but that lasts about a year. And then she's like, And like, now your friend's like, oh, I've seen George Benson. I don't even know who that is.
Yeah. I think it's both. I think if any of my friends, like there are definitely like certain friends that are like, I will go. If you have tickets, like let's freaking go. Actually, I was having dinner with a friend the other night and he was like, I'm going to be in New York at the same time as you at the beginning of June. And I was like, what are you talking about? And he was like, yeah. If I want to come to the show, like if I could get a ticket to the show, like I want to come to the show. I was like, Danny, I'm not going to be in New York at the beginning of June. I'm going to be in New York at the end of June. But that's to go see friends. Like I'm not even playing. And he was like, no, you have that show. And I was like, what? And I had to go look at my schedule to see that he was totally right. I had two shows. And what's funny is that in my calendar, I had a show for something here in LA, like something completely different. And yeah, so I do have my friends that are like, I want to come to whatever show I can. And then other friends are like, you know, that's cool. That's fun.
Yeah. George who?
Yeah, George who?
Wow, that's cool. Well, thanks for coming all the way out here, and this has been a blast.
Yeah, I've had a great time chatting with you.
Good. Wow. Well, we do talk about pressure on this podcast a lot, but what an incredible example of how to handle it, but also a lesson in putting yourself in those situations. You know, it's not only great for you to be under pressure, but it's important that you seek out those situations, or at the very least, don't turn them down when they show up, you know, because there are a lot of skills, some skills that you just can't learn unless you're in that kind of situation, that sink or swim or, you know, do or die. And wow, I mean, she's had some extreme experience and she's handled it well. And the you know, the payoff is big. You know, it's a good reminder that if you're too comfortable, then you're probably doing something wrong. So learn to love that uncomfortable feeling and get out of your comfort zone. It's the only way forward. You know, it's the secret. It's one of the big secrets to any kind of success, really. And it's a simple thing to say, and it's a challenging thing to practice, but you got to just kind of learn to love it. Just keep pushing yourself, you know, and it will take you to bigger and better things. I guarantee it. Well, Cal Arts is in Santa Clarita, and I thought I would explain what a legacy act is because we brought that up. And so I just Googled it for a clearer definition that I could probably come up with. But I got some kind of funny responses. So I guess maybe it's a controversial term for some folks. But one article talked about, you know, pre-90s bands, and another one talked about legends who don't put out new music anymore. And I think they are bands that had huge careers and are now still touring on that success, even though they may put out new music, but the fans are really coming for the old stuff. But all I know is that I've played with a bunch of legacy acts, and it's usually my favorite music, and the bands like to tour all the time, so I just love them. If you can get an act like that, it's the best gigs to have, because they just keep going. Well, that's my show, and I thought I would leave you with a live version of Wichita Lineman performed by George Benson with Liliana on percussion, because it's just such a good song, and I love it so much. And man, George Benson, oh, what a great version. So I hope you enjoy it, and I will talk at you next time. Wow, you've made it to the end. I'm hoping it's because you completely enjoyed yourself and are now filled with knowledge and inspiration to move forward with your dreams. If that is the case and you would like to stay informed of new episodes, live events, and general news, please go to divebarrockstar.com and sign up for the mailing list. If you have any questions, comments, corrections, or complaints about anything you hear on the show, please email me at fanmail@divebarrockstar.com and you may even end up on the show. We at the Dive Bar Rockstar Podcast, with all of our hearts, thank you for listening, and remember, it's all about dreams.